Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you, Robert, Aaron, and Jackson for that good singing. And boy, do I miss Daryl. There's no water up here, but we'll see if we can get through that. Thank you for coming out this morning. Appreciate you being here on this nice Sunday sunny afternoon. We're going to start this morning in Acts chapter 2, if you'd like to turn there. But first, a little story about the origin of this message. It's been something I've been chewing on for about a month and a half or so. And it started, some of you know that I was part of the Director of Camp Ministries search committee, along with Luke Goff here from the chapel and several others. During one of our interviews with one of the candidates, we had a discussion. It wasn't so much about the interview, but we had a discussion about what difficulties do young people face today. We asked this question of this person because they were a youth pastor. And after they answered it, we kind of discussed it as a committee. Some of you know Bob and Florence Hansen from Des Moines. It was their granddaughter who was part of the committee, Erin Hansen. She's my cousin Rod's daughter. She says in her opinion that the problem with young people today is that they don't have deep, meaningful relationships. In fact, she went on to say, thank you, Ashley, appreciate that. She went on to say that many of them don't even know how to have deep and meaningful relationships. And in her opinion, social media of today has a lot to do with it. Now, I'm not up here to slam Facebook or to slam Twitter or anything like that, but you have to admit that Facebook is one thing it's done. It's redefined the word friend, really for a generation. You ask young people today, how many friends do you have? They'll say hundreds. Some may even say thousands of friends. A lot different answer than I would have given when I was a young person. I could probably count them on my hand. What social media has allowed people to do, and again, Facebook has a lot of good things about it. That's not my point. But one of the things social media allows people to do is to reach a lot of people at one time. It allows them to reach a lot of people, but really only on a surface level. It allows them to present themselves as they want to be presented. And allows them to only show the part of them that they want others to see. I thought a lot about that conversation for a long time. And as I thought of those characteristics, reaching a lot of people at a time, but only on a surface level, only showing them what we want, how we want to be seen. And it really hit me, that's kind of my experience here at Northgate Gospel Chapel. I can come on a Sunday and I can touch 80 of you at the same time. But do I only keep it on a surface level? Hi, how you doing? How was your week? Good, thanks. Let's go on. Do I get deeper with any of you? Do I only show you the part of me that I want you to see as a good church-going elder of Northgate? And I thought about, is this really what the local church is supposed to be like? Where people just come on Sundays, we kind of talk to a few people, socialize a bit, and then we go back home. Of course, the answer is no. That's not the meaning or that's not the purpose of the local church. Let's look at Acts chapter 2, verse 42. This was, of course, a very early church. It says in verse 42, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship and to the breaking of bread and to prayer. I think we do that fairly well here at Northgate. Verse 43, everyone was filled with awe and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common, selling their possessions and goods they gave to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and they ate together and with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. Jump over to chapter 4, verse 32. All the believers were one in heart and mind. No one claimed that any of his possessions were his own, but they shared everything they had. With great power, the apostles continued to testify to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and with much grace was upon them all. There was no needy persons among them, for from time to time those who owned lands or houses sold them, brought the money from the sales and put it at the apostles' feet, and it was distributed to anyone who had need. I don't believe it was just financial needs that were met in this community of believers. It says in verse 32, all the believers were of one, or one in heart and one in mind. They knew each other. They knew the needs of each other. They met together and they met those needs. As we see, they spent every day together as believers. And they knew and they cared for one another. In Colossians, Paul writes this to the believers there. He says, therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. Then verse 14, over all these virtues put on love, which binds them together in perfect unity. Our interactions with one another here in the local church need to be bound in love. They need to be centered on love. That's the key to making them work. Godly love needs to characterize our life, our interactions with each other here. Not just sort of a touching on a very surface level. The Lord said, by this will all men know that you are my disciples, that you have love for one another. So to pursue this further, as you might guess, we have to go to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, which is where we'll turn now. As you're turning there, let me remind you of something that happened in Matthew 22. Matthew 22, the Lord is approached and someone asks him, what is the greatest commandment? And this is what the Lord said. He said, to love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. And then there's this verse. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. I went searching in what little Greek reference material I have to look at this word hang. And there's got to be some special meaning to this word. But no, it means hang. It means like hanging a door on a door hinge. What the Lord is saying is that all the law and the prophets rely on or depend on love. Just like a door without a hinge is useless, it can't be used. The commandments without love mean nothing. You might say, well, how can that be? And let's, very quickly, I don't have time to go through all the law and the prophets. We'd be here for a little while. So let's just look at the Ten Commandments and just see how love plays a vital role in those. The first four, as I'm sure you know, have to do with our love for God or obedience to God or commandments towards Him. If we truly love the Lord, does somebody have to tell us to not put a God before Him? If we truly love God, why would we even think about making an idol or bowing down to something besides Him? That's commandment number two. And again, if we love God, why would we choose to misuse His name? Why would we trivialize the name of someone we love by using it flippantly? And of course, if we truly love someone, if we love God, we're going to want to have a day that's for Him. Commandment four, observe the Sabbath. And as we look to other people, sort of the horizontal part of this, if I truly love my mother and I love my father, of course I'm going to honor her. No one has to tell me to honor your father and mother if I love them. And if I love my neighbor as myself, the idea of murder or committing adultery or stealing or giving false testimony against them or coveting what they have is ridiculous. I wouldn't even think of doing those things if I truly love my neighbor as myself. So the law and the prophets hang on love, these two commandments. And in the same way, our relationships here hinge on us loving one another. How we interact with each other, how much time we spend with each other, how much we care for each other depends on how we love them. So let's look at 1 Corinthians 13. I know this is very familiar. Many of you probably had this read at your wedding or you've looked at it many times. But I want to look at it specifically in regards to loving one another here within the local church. 1 Corinthians 1 through 3. 13, 1 through 3. If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. I want you for a minute to think of a dear friend. Either a dear friend you have now or a dear friend maybe you've had in the past. And as you're thinking about that dear friend, I want to ask you, would you consider them a dear friend because they could speak in the tongues of men and of angels? Do you consider that person a dear friend because of their deep scriptural knowledge or because of the great faith that they have? Do you consider them your great friend because of the great things that they did? Or are they a great friend because they love? Because they've loved you, and you've loved them. And that's what makes it a great friendship, what makes them a dear, true friend. Kind of as a side note, this is something we have to learn. If you think about kids, often when they're picking friends at school or in the neighborhood, they're going to go to the person who maybe speaks really well. They got the cool language. Or they're going to look for the person that really knows things or knows people. Or they're going to look for someone who does cool things. That's what I want for my friend. And they go after those type of people as the ones they want to be friends with. Hopefully, they'll mature. And they realize that a friendship's not based on what the other person can say or do or thinks. But a true friendship is based on love. It's based on caring for one another. Sadly, some don't figure that out. And as they come to adults and they start picking friends, they start picking mates, they don't realize that love is the key to making that friendship, that relationship, work. A few Wednesdays ago, at prayer meeting, Gordy was praying for Warfield Munts. And I was chewing on these verses as he was praying. And it really struck me as Gordy prayed, there was a real deep love and a deep friendship there between the two of them that still exists today. I think if I ask Gordy, what was that based on? Is it based on Warfield's ability to speak, his scriptural knowledge, the fact that he was a missionary, or that Warfield loved, that makes that a dear friendship? That's the way it should be. When we're gone from this world, how do you want to be remembered? As one of these things in these first three verses, as a great speaker, as one who has great depth of scriptural knowledge, someone who has a faith that can move mountains, someone who's willing to do whatever, to give up whatever for the Lord, or someone who's loved, someone who's cared, someone who's taken the time and the energy to make relationships work with one another. This was a difficult message for me to speak on. And if you ask the Lindish man, I say, hey, he was kind of worked up about this one. She said it the other day. You seem to be up, I forget the word she used, something about this message. It's been difficult for me. I fear for myself that I do a lot of things here at Northgate. I trust I do them well. I trust I do them for the Lord. But I've had to ask myself, do I do them out of love? Do I love you? Do I do the things I do because I have the love of God in me and I'm sharing that with you? A few Wednesdays ago, as we were praying, there was someone tried to get in the front door over there. You could tell someone was pulling on the door. And I went and opened it and there was a lady there. And she says, oh, you having a meeting going on? And I said, yeah. And I explained to her what the meeting was. And I asked her if she wanted to come in. And she said, yeah. So she came in and sat down. Her name was Joy. And she participated in the Bible study. She took part. And then afterwards, it was time for her to tell me her story. And her story was that she was homeless, that she had lived in the Midwest and came out here trying to find a job. No place to live. She'd been spending the night in the subway restaurant down in the U District because they're open all night. And if you buy a sandwich, they were willing to let her stay. She had nothing except this bag that she was carrying with some clothes. So I helped her out, and I invited her to come back for our movie night that we were having that next Sunday night. And sure enough, she came. And I appreciated that she was willing to come. She came and listened to the movie, but again, she wanted to talk to me again afterwards. And as the story continued, it was the fact that she had a bus ticket for Monday night to go back to Indiana where she came from. But she hadn't slept for days. She hadn't showered for days. And all she wanted was a hotel room that had a shower and a bed she could sleep in. So once again, Linda and I, we took her over to a place and we took care of that. But as I thought of these verses in 1 Corinthians 13, it says, if I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. Why did I help her? Was it good religion on my part to take care of the needy? Was it because I felt my duty of my position as an elder here? Or was it just because I wanted to get rid of her? Sometimes it's really easy to throw money at a problem and not really care and not really love. As you look around the people here at the chapel, if you're in the front row, it might be awkward, so don't do that physically, but think about those who are here. And my questions to you today is, do you have deep, meaningful relationships with the brothers and sisters here at Northgate? Or like Facebook, is everything of our lives with one another just on the surface? Why do you talk to those that you talk to when you're here? Is it to deepen those relationships? Is it to find out more about one another so that you can love more, pray more, care more? Ultimately, do you love? Do you love the saints that are here? Let's go on. Verse 4. Question might be, well, what is love? And love is many things. And Paul now gives a definition, or rather a bunch of characteristics of what love is. The character traits of what is love. And as we go through these things, these are all very practical, day-to-day things that we've got to deal with in our lives. These are character traits. In other passages in the New Testament and in Scripture, like the one we just read in Colossians 3, there'll be things like patience, kindness, humility, charity, selflessness, courtesy. But Paul here tells us those are all driven by love, or should be driven by love. Paul says in Galatians 5:14, the entire law is summed up in one command: love your neighbor as yourself. And in this section, he beautifully brings together so many things of what our lives should be, of what our love should be towards one another. As we read through these, and again, I know many of you have read these perhaps hundreds of times, it's not a question of what do these things mean. We don't have to be Greek scholars. We don't have to do a lot of exegesis to try and figure out what's the point or what's he saying. They're very simple. The question is more, do I have these? Do these characterize me? Is this the way I am? Is this how I love the people here at Northgate Chapel? Verse 4, love is patient. As I think about this, I think about God's patience with me. As we stumble, as we turn away from Him, as we disappoint Him, yet His love is patient. His love remains. His love is unwavering. The King James says that love suffereth long. When we interact with people, at times we're going to suffer with them. They're going to bug us. They're going to do things that we're not happy with, that we want to change. Love suffereth long. Does your love suffer long here at Northgate? Are you patient with one another? Are you patient with the elders? Maybe we're not acting or moving the right direction of you want, or at the speed that you want. Are you patient? Are you patient with parents, with young children, who maybe aren't acting the way you remember yours did? At least you think you remember how yours did. Are we patient with one another? Love is patient. Next one is love is kind, and perhaps this is the easiest one to understand. We know, I trust, what it means to be kind to one another. A kind word, a friendly smile, a warm greeting. And I was thinking, this is how relationships start. Just starts with a warm hello, with a nice smile, with a nice, how are you doing? And meaning it. And so I ask, are we even starting relationships here with one another? Now, I know many of you, and I know many of you are very kind. And there are a lot of you who give of your lives, whether it's taking people, whether it's picking people up, whether it's visiting people. There's a lot of kindness out there. But I must ask myself, am I kind to everyone? What's your first reaction when someone new walks in the front door? What's your first reaction to someone maybe who's not washed, who's dirty? Is your first reaction, well, someone else will take care of that? I remember years ago, I used to always have these thoughts, well, that's the elder's job. I can't say that anymore, but hopefully that's not your excuse or your thoughts. Easiest thing is just to ignore them. But love is kind. Again, just a reminder, think of the kindness of God towards us. We were aliens and strangers in this world. Oh, the kindness of God. Oh, that we may be like Him. Next one is love does not envy. I think if I walked around to each of you and asked, do you envy people here at the chapel? I'm guessing that most of you would say, no. No, I don't think I envy. We don't really, I don't think, even recognize the fact in our lives that this could be us. But I think envy often reveals itself other ways. Envy might reveal itself in criticism. We may not realize it, but we may criticize those that have things that we wish we had. When others talk of goodness in their life, or the things that they have, or the blessings God has shown upon them, or what their children have done, how do you react? How do you react to other people receiving good and other people having wonderful things in their lives? You know, if I love you, I'm going to rejoice in your accomplishments. I'm going to rejoice in the blessings God has given you. I'm going to be rejoicing with you of what God has given you. And you know, if I love you, I should also desire to hear about those things and rejoice with you. Love does not envy. Next one, love does not boast. The King James, and I love this, I don't even know what it means, but the King James says, love does not vaunteth itself up. I don't know what that means, but it sounds pretty cool. Love does not boast. You know, boasting is something, I think most of us, it just turns us off just like that. If we hear somebody boasting about something, right away our reaction is, I don't like this. Would you please turn that off? And yet I think it's so difficult to see in ourselves. If we detest boasting so much, of course we would not want it in ourselves. But again, it may reveal ourselves in other ways. Not this outward, pompous, I'm the greatest person in the world. But it may reveal itself by us not really listening to what other people are saying. Have you been involved in a conversation where you're not listening? Your thought of, what am I going to say next? How can I add to this? How can I do better? I got a better story than that one is. Oh, they've been to that place. Well, I've been to a place greater than that. We start having these thoughts in our heads about, I'm going to say something better than that person. That's boasting. We want to put in our next story, our next input. We want to say what we've purchased, how fast we've driven in a car, or how many great things our kids have done. Are you a listener? Do you listen to other people? Are you intent on what they're saying about themselves? Rather than saying, how can I add to this? How can I improve upon this? How can I show that I've done something great? Love is not proud, the next one, which is in some ways very similar. I think it goes back again to this idea of listening. Am I proud of what I've done? Am I proud of what I do? And I want to make sure that that's known to other people. Or again, am I listening? Again, what's your first reaction if a homeless person walks in that front door? Are you too proud to go up to them and say, glad to see you, welcome? What can I do for you? Can I help? Can I get you something? Are we too proud to do that? Is my work so important that I can't take time to be with others? Am I so busy doing my thing? Because that's important, to take time to be with others. Love is not proud. Next one, love is not rude. King James, love does not behave itself unseemingly. This is common courtesy. I think love is courteous. Love helps. Love does the right thing. It says the right thing. And again, I don't know if I've ever witnessed any of you being openly rude to other people. But how many times do we ignore others? How many times do we see someone sitting by themselves? Someone who needs a friend. Someone who wants just somebody to listen to them. And I ignore them. That's being rude. And love is not rude. You know, I have my friends that are here. Not that I have favorites, but there are some of you I'm more comfortable talking with. I have family here that I want to spend time with and talk to. There's a lot of other people here too. And am I rude? Am I ignoring others? Love is not rude. Love is not self-seeking is the next one. And this is one I've thought a lot about. And I guess this maybe points the finger at me more than even some of these others. I think the root of most of our sin is putting me first, isn't it? I want this, I want to do this, I want to feel this way, I want, and that's our sin. And a lot of times in situations, I want others to notice what I'm doing. I want you to comment on what I'm doing and how much I'm doing, and I want you to appreciate that, and I deserve that. Love is not self-seeking. You know, one thing I've learned over the years, and when I get to a point up in a situation, whether it's with my wife, whether it's with my kids, whether it's here at the chapel, if I expect something, I'm not going to win. If I expect something to happen, either it's going to happen, and you know, I just expected that, or it's not going to happen, I'm going to be disappointed. Well, how come somebody didn't say anything? How come you didn't do that? How come you didn't react this way? Once we start expecting, we're asking for trouble. And good relationships are not based on expecting things from other people. And I think it's not that love doesn't take what we get and give it back to the Lord. It says love is not even self-seeking. We don't even seek what's ours. We don't even seek to be noticed. We don't even seek to be thanked. Do you seek self here? Do you expect things from other people? Or is your love not self-seeking? On the other hand, do we thank and appreciate others? Do I even notice what other people are doing? Or am I so consumed in myself I can't even see all the love that's going on around me? I should notice that. I should thank people for that. I should appreciate what people do. I should just appreciate who you are and that you're here. And not seeking my own self. Next one, love is not easily angered. I don't have much to say about that. Except to ask you, is there something that makes you angry? Is there something that people do here that angers you? And I would just suggest you take some time to think about it. Think about what is it that makes you angry? Because love is not easily angered. Next, love does not keep a record of wrongs. King James says, thinks no evil. You know, if we start to open ourselves up to others, if we start to care about others, we will get hurt. We will be disappointed. People are going to hurt us. They're going to do wrong against us. But here it says, love not only doesn't keep a record, but I think it's more than that. It's love doesn't even make a record of wrongs. One writer says that love is naive to people trying to hurt. Love sees the bright side. Love assumes good intentions were met. So often we know what people are doing. We know why they acted that way. We know what they're thinking. We know their real thoughts. Love does not keep, or love does not even make a record of wrongs. Again, think of God's love for you. Just think if God kept a record of wrongs. whether it was before you were a believer, those have been forgiven. But what if God today was up there with a tally? And every time we did wrong, He was up there making a note of it. I'm going to store that away and I'm going to bring that up when they get here. That's not our God. That's not love. Love does not make or keep a record of wrong. Next one, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with truth. And I think for me, this one gets into the secret thoughts that we have for others. The things that we may never want to tell anybody what we're thinking about, but they're there. How do I really feel when others fail? How do I really feel when I see other Christians struggle? Maybe I don't openly delight in it, but maybe I think, well, you know, that's what they deserve. Or, I knew that was coming, or I'm glad that would never happen to me. Love does not delight in evil. Do we expose others' failures to other people? Do we take delight in putting somebody down to somebody else? Do we take delight in saying, hey, you know what happened to so-and-so? Guess what happened to their family? Guess what happened to their child? Guess what happened there, this or that? Love does not delight in evil, but rather love covers a multitude of sins. And I just want to be careful here. As parents, as elders, as brothers and sisters here at the chapel, we need to deal with people living in sin. And it's not that we say, well, no, don't worry about sin. We deal with it, but we don't rejoice in the sin or the failings of others. But rather, and Paul lumps these next ones together, love always protects. And I think this is the opposite of criticism. We're going to stand up for those we love. When others are putting down, others are criticizing other believers, what do? Do we join in? Or do we say, that's not right? That's your brother. That's your sister. Love protects. Love always trusts. And I think love assumes the positive side in people. It trusts that good will come. It trusts that God is working in others. It trusts that they are growing, they are improving. And it trusts that the good will come from these people. Love always hopes. We want what's best for other people. And we have a hope that that will come. We think what's best for others. Love always perseveres. Regardless of how others respond, if we don't get that thank you, we don't get that appreciation, maybe the person even turns their back against us when we try and show them love. Love always perseveres. And finally, love never fails. Again, think of God's love for you. What if His love failed just once? His love never fails, and neither should ours. Paul lists some of the things, we're not going to read through them, but Paul lists some of the things that do fail, some of the things that will end. But our love should never fail, just as God's love never does fail. Being overwhelmed with these things, and again, I hope one of those maybe stuck out to you for your own personal life. We have to ask the question, how do we get these things? How can I be more like this? Well, it's practice, practice, practice. If you enjoy the Olympics and saw some of the magnificent things those men and women did, how did they do it? They practiced over and over and over. There's a lot of people in this room right here to practice on. Practice loving other people. I've often thought about swimming. You can go to the greatest swim teacher in the world. Go to Michael Phelps' School of Swimming. Or for us older people, the Mark Spitz School of Swimming. And sit down and have the best instructor, how to swim, how to breaststroke, how to butterfly. But until you jump in the pool, you're never going to learn how to swim. Here's your pool. Jump in and learn how to love one another. We don't have time. This will be part of your homework assignment if you do your questions for tonight, of looking at Matthew 25. It's the sheep and the goats. And we're not going to turn there. We're not going to go over it. But what I'm going to ask you to do this afternoon and talk about tonight is, I'll be at work. On what basis are these two groups of people separated? It's based on how they treat other people. It's based on what they do or don't do for other people that God separates them between the sheep and the goats. But again, the question is, how can we live like this? How can we love as we should? You know, it's great to have a wife who's a preschool teacher. All kinds of fun things to play around with in the house. Which is what I'm going to do for you now about how we can love. I have here, this is not from my preschool teacher wife, this is from work. This is a piece of steel. It's a piece of high strength steel that we use for some of our landing gear parts and other parts on our airplanes. This piece of metal, this steel, on its own can do nothing. What I have here are some other pieces that have metal around them, and you just have to trust me. This piece of metal has no ability to pick these things up. Even though these are metal and this is metal, it doesn't do anything. It has no ability within it. It's not a magnet. This, on the other hand, is a magnet. It's part of its nature. It inherently is a magnet and will attract things that are metal, certain metals. So as I put the magnet next to these things, it, again, because of its nature, it picks them up. This piece of steel does not have that in its nature. It can't do that. However, as I put this piece of steel next to the magnet, this piece of steel is now a magnet. Because it's in close proximity, it assumes the nature of what it's close to. It now is a magnet. It's taken what's in the magnet, it's become part of it, and now it can transfer that into other things. The illustration, I trust, is pretty obvious. We don't have the ability to love on our own. Without God, our love is nothing. It's only selfish. It's only for our own pleasure. We don't have a way to love other people. How do we learn love? Is by the one who is love. God is love. 1 John 4. If we are close to God and we allow the love of God to flow through us, we then can love other people. And that's the only way we can do it. It's only through the love of God that we can love one another. Since some of you, just the fun of science. I love science. Some materials even have the ability, once they're away from the magnet, to remain magnets. It's called retentivity. It actually keeps on to that magnetic field. That doesn't fit my illustration, but it's kind of cool. Do you want to learn to love? As we've gone over these things, have you realized that your love isn't good enough? That it can be improved upon, that there are ways that we can love more, that we can love better. Do you love one another here at Northgate? Do you display that love? Is it active? Is it growing? Are you involved in meaningful relationships with one another? Where you care? Where you give? Where you love? I was reading an article in Missions Magazine. It was actually the July Missions Magazine, an article by Michael Tuttle. And he quoted someone named William Carey, who was a missionary in India. And William Carey said, "I'm not afraid of failing. I'm afraid of succeeding at things that don't matter. I'm not afraid of failing. I'm afraid of succeeding at things that don't matter." If we try and love, we're going to fail. We're going to disappoint. We're going to let people down. We're going to be rude to people. We may get angry with people. We may think of ourselves. We may be proud. But that's no excuse for not trying. That's no excuse for just saying that's somebody else's job. Let's not be afraid of failing. Let's be afraid of succeeding at things that don't matter. Loving the saints matters. Loving one another matters, and let's do that. I would like to do what may be a bit awkward for you, but I'd like to have just a minute of silence. And I want you to think about these things. I want you to think about one another here. I want you to think about your love, and is your love patient? Is it kind? Does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it is not rude, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs, does not delight in evil but rejoices in truth. Does your love always protect, always trust, always hope? Does it always persevere, and does it never fail for one another here? So let's just take a moment of silence. Think about others. Think about how you can improve your love for them. And then I'll close our time in prayer after just about a minute. Oh God, our Father, we read and we sometimes sing the words, "Behold, what manner of love that you have lavished upon us, that we should be called the sons of God," and that we are. Father, may your love overwhelm us. As we struggle in our Christian lives, may we just be reminded and just in awe of how much you love us. Sinners, enemies with you. And yet your love reached out and grabbed a hold of us. Your love sent your Son to die on the cross that we might become your children by faith. Father, may that love just drive us. May that love just again overwhelm us as we look around to our brothers and sisters here at Northgate. You are love, O God, and may we learn to love through you. May we learn to love one another as you have loved us. Father, may we care for one another. May we be willing to give to one another, whether it's our time, whether it's our care, whether it's our ears to listen. May we love as we have been loved. Father, thank you for these verses, and may we continue to go over them and may we continue to practice. Help us when we fail to get right back up and to love some more. And Father, we think of the world around us who doesn't know you. Father, they need your love, and we are your missionaries to those around us. May you give us love for them. May you give us hearts that see them as lost. May we have hearts that only want to bring them to you, that they might be saved. Oh God, we thank you. We ask your blessing upon us now as we depart. In Jesus' name and for his glory, amen.